eKatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of eKatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are wrestling with a claim that's, well, it's pretty big. It might just redefine the history of technology itself. We're diving into the book Spatial Computing by Pamela Vold and Shashi Shekhar, and they argue, essentially, that we're witnessing the birth of the third wave of computing.
That is a huge claim. It really is. And it's exciting because, you know, it reframes almost everything you thought you knew about tech. Yeah. The book basically says that after all these decades of screens and data, the next big thing isn't just more digital info, it's physical location.
Okay, let's unpack that third wave idea first, just to give us some context. What were the first two waves, and how is this one supposed to be so fundamentally different?
Right. So if we really simplify, you know, decades of history, the first wave, that was all about centralized computing. Think mainframes, punch cards, batch processing. It was really about numbers, crunching data.
Okay, numbers. Got it.
Then the second wave gave us connectivity. The internet, screens everywhere, mobile devices popping up. That wave was all about information, connecting people and data.
Right. So first wave, crunching.
Yeah.
Second wave, connecting. And this third wave, spatial computing, what's its core? What's it about?
It's the tech that lets computers not just like map where you are, but actually understand and reason about and interact with the physical world's geometry, its geography. It's the field that ties together things we already know, like GPS and Google Maps, but also augmented reality, AR, and the complex stuff needed for self-driving cars. And the big significance is that it moves computing off the flat screen, you know, out into the 3D physical world. And that's going to profoundly reshape how you interact with technology day to day.
Wow. That sounds like it needs a really broad approach. It's not just code, is it? It's psychology, physics, maybe even city planning. Who are the authors who can actually pull together a framework like that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And they are kind of a perfectly matched duo for this. First, you've got Pamela Vold. Her background is fascinatingly mixed. Human-computer interaction, cognitive psychology, emerging tech design. Her focus is really on translating how we naturally process space, you know, how you form mental maps in your head into computer interfaces that feel intuitive.
Okay, so she's handling the human side.
Yeah.
Making sure the tech works with our natural spatial smarts instead of forcing us into awkward digital boxes.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. Then there's Shashi Shekhar. He brings the computational power, the rigor. He's a really distinguished computer scientist, ACM and IE fellow with deep, deep technical expertise in GIS, geographic information systems, spatial databases, algorithms. He provides the sort of foundational math and the technical structures needed to make it all work.
That partnership sounds key. But I wonder, doesn't mixing something fluid like cognitive psychology with the rigidity of computer science create some friction, some tension?
Oh, absolutely it does. But that tension is actually where the innovation happens, right? Vold ensures it stays human-centered, while Shekhar ensures it's computationally solid and, importantly, scalable. You really need both perspectives to tackle this huge paradigm shift, which brings us back to their central thesis. Spatial computing is this fundamental blend of digital information with physical space, and it works by leveraging our own natural spatial intelligence.
That core problem they're tackling is so interesting when you think about it. We live and move in this rich 3D spatial world, yet for decades, our computing was mostly trapped in 2D, on a screen, in a spreadsheet.
Right, and the book lays out this really comprehensive journey to bridge that very gap. It's designed pretty broadly, too, for professionals, designers, even just the curious reader, anyone interested. They move very logically. They start with the theory, you know, spatial cognition, geometry. Then they build up the tech infrastructure, sensors, processors, algorithms. And then they land on the real-world impact, healthcare, education, and, of course, the massive ethical questions around privacy.
To really get a handle on this shift, the book says we need to remember that spatial thinking itself isn't new at all. The map. The map is basically the original spatial computing tool. And they kick off with probably the most famous historical example, Dr. John Snow's 1854 cholera map of London.
Yeah, that story is just so powerful. It just shows raw spatial thinking saving lives. Back then, the prevailing theory was bad air, miasma, causing cholera. Snow just ignored it. He took physical reality where people died, where the water pumps were, and he mapped it visually.
He plotted every single cholera death.
Right.
And then overlaid the locations of the public water pumps. And the pattern just leaps off the page. The deaths cluster tightly around one specific pump, the Broad Street pump.
It was a breakthrough moment in spatial epidemiology, in problem solving, really. By putting the data on a map, visualizing it geographically, he turned abstract numbers into concrete evidence, which led directly to them removing the pump handle. It proves that when you anchor complex data in space, the human mind can process it and find solutions.
That's the foundational thinking. But okay, to scale that kind of analysis globally, you needed a serious technology engine. The book points to navigation, specifically GPS, as the first huge technological leap in this direction.
Right. We all use GPS constantly, but how it works is often kind of a black box. The key thing is, the calculation doesn't happen up on the satellites. It happens in your phone or your car's receiver. Your device listens for these extremely precise timing signals from at least 4 satellites orbiting Earth.
Wait a second. If the whole thing relies on measuring tiny differences in timing signals, doesn't that mean the accuracy depends on my phone's internal clock being perfect?
Yeah.
How do they deal with the tiny delays, the latency?
Ah, that's the clever part. That's why you need the 4th satellite. The signals from the first 3 can figure out your 3D position if your clock is perfectly synced with the satellite clocks, which it never is. The signal from that 4th satellite lets the receiver calculate and correct for its own tiny clock error.
Ah.
That's how it achieves the incredible precision we take for granted now. That process is called trilateration.
Okay, so knowing where we are is step 1. Step 2 is making sense of the world around that point. And that's where the analytical powerhouse, GIS, Geographic Information Systems, comes in.
Yeah, GIS is absolutely essential for pulling all this location data together and making sense of it. The book uses that classic layer cake metaphor, which is just the perfect way to picture it. Think of GIS software as letting you digitally stack up endless layers of thematic information. You know, streets, zoning boundaries, sewer lines, elevation, population density, layer after layer.
Right. So if I'm, a city planner, I can stack the elevation layer, then the flood zone layer, then the property parcel layer, and boom, I instantly see exactly which houses are in that new flood zone and might need evacuation notices or insurance checks. The layering handles the complexity.
Precisely. And to manage all that data effectively, GIS mainly uses 2 formats. First, you have vector data that uses points, lines, and polygons for distinct, defined features, like a specific traffic light, a point, a road center line, or a building footprint, a polygon. It's great for things with clear boundaries, legal descriptions, inventories.
Okay, defined features. And then the other type is raster data. I'm guessing that's for the stuff that's more continuous. Blurry.
Exactly right. Raster data is basically a grid of pixels. Each pixel has a value. It's used for continuous phenomena that don't really have sharp edges. Think temperature maps, elevation models from terrain scans, satellite imagery. You often need both vector and raster data together to build a really complete digital picture of reality.
So you have this robust foundation, GPS telling us where, GIS letting us analyze what's there, and then that just exploded with the rise of location-based services, LBS. The smartphone, as the Butch points out, really is the ultimate pocket-sized spatial sensor that made this whole thing ubiquitous.
Totally. But the book argues the real endgame for spatial computing isn't just better apps on your phone. It's what they call the spatial web, or sometimes the AR cloud. That's the next frontier, moving beyond individual apps entirely.
Okay, now this is where it starts to get a little bit sci-fi, a bit mind-bending. This isn't just me looking through my phone and seeing digital stuff overlaid on the world. This is talking about a persistent, shared, one-to-one scale digital model of the actual world.
Yes, and that word persistent is absolutely key. It means the digital information is anchored directly onto physical locations, and it stays there. It's accessible to anyone else using AR glasses or even just their smartphone camera. You mentioned Pokemon Go earlier. That was a very early kind of primitive glimpse of this idea. Millions of people interacting with digital things tied to real-world places.
Right, okay. But let's think about a future commerce example, maybe more relevant. Imagine I'm standing on a street corner. Instead of pulling up Yelp or Google Maps on my phone screen, what if the live customer reading for the coffee shop right next to me is just visually anchored to his front door, visible just by looking?
That's the shift they're describing. The destination is no longer a website URL or a file path. The destination becomes a physical place, enhanced by this persistent, shared digital layer. And this deep integration leads us straight into the major themes the book explores.
Okay, theme 1, which we've sort of touched on already, is the convergence of physical and digital realms. Sounds good, but what does that really mean in practice? Say, for how businesses might operate differently?
Well, the authors emphasize the goal isn't to replace physical reality, but to create these hybrid realities that genuinely enhance it, make it better, more informative. For businesses, this means rethinking where computation even lives. It's not just in the server room anymore. It could be guiding robots, picking orders in a warehouse based on their physical location, or providing real-time diagnostic overlays for an engineer looking at a machine on the factory floor. Computation is in the space.
Makes sense. And the second theme is really the value proposition, right? Enhancement of human cognitive capability.
Exactly. The core power of spatial computing, they argue, is augmentation, making us smarter, essentially.
Right. It's about tapping into our natural spatial skills. We're good at understanding 3D space. So by visualizing complex data in that 3D space, think a surgeon planning a complex operation with a 3D model, it improves our spatial reasoning. It lets us do tasks that were just too hard or impossible on a flat screen. It extends our memory, gives us instant situational awareness.
Mm-hmm. And then the third theme, which is the absolutely crucial counterpoint to all this capability, is ethical responsibility and privacy. They really hammer this home. Location data is not just another data point, it's different.
Yeah, I found their description of the danger really chilling. Your movement patterns create a spatial signature of your life, and it's almost impossible to truly anonymize that signature. We've seen court cases where tiny location details become key evidence. Is the book suggesting our current privacy laws just aren't equipped to handle this unique spatial signature?
Absolutely. That's a core part of their argument. Traditional data privacy laws, often built around things like purchase history or IP addresses, they just can't cope with the sheer sensitivity of constant, precise location tracking. They frame privacy here not just as, you know, protecting data bits, but as preserving a fundamental human right. The right to simply exist in physical space without being constantly watched, analyzed, and predicted by algorithms.
Wow. Yeah. The book definitely introduces some powerful concepts that stick with you. They really capture the whole philosophy. Let's share a few of those key ideas that stood out. The first one really sums up that transition from the second wave to this third wave. They state something like, spatial computing represents the end of the screen as the primary mediator between humans and digital information, ushering in an era where computation becomes as natural and ubiquitous as the air we breathe. Yeah. It suggests the tech is just going to dissolve into the world around us, become invisible.
Yeah, disappear into the background. And tied right into the ethics we were just talking about, they have this warning: your location data is not just another piece of data. It is a digital signature of your physical life. And unlike other information, it is nearly impossible to truly anonymize. That really underscores the severe, non-negotiable risk involved in tracking where people go.
And finally, there's a quote that brings the focus back to the human element, the purpose. The true measure of spatial computing success will not be its technical sophistication, but its ability to make human life more meaningful, connected, and fulfilling. Mm. It's a crucial reminder that the tech has to serve us, you know, not the other way around.
Definitely. And the book doesn't just say theoretical. It offers concrete ways for readers, no matter their job, to apply this thinking now. For business leaders, for instance, it's about strategic technology planning. Using GIS analysis for smarter decisions, like choosing better store locations, optimizing supply chain routes, figuring out which logistical processes could really benefit from spatial tech enhancement.
And on the social impact side, the book provides frameworks for using spatial analysis as a tool for social justice and public good. You can literally map inequalities, identify food deserts in underserved neighborhoods, or show how access to parks or healthcare facilities is unevenly distributed geographically. Mm. It makes things that were previously invisible visible on a map.
That's a powerful application. And even on a personal level, just critically using the tech. These insights let you scrutinize the navigation apps you use every single day. An informed user realizes that an algorithm just blindly optimizing for the absolute fastest route might be sending tons of noisy, polluting truck traffic through quiet residential streets or low-income areas.
Right, creating new problems while solving another.
Exactly. That's algorithmic bias in action right there on your map. And having some spatial literacy helps you spot it, question it.
So wrapping things up, yeah. What was the biggest takeaway for you from this whole deep dive into spatial computing? What really stuck?
For me, I think the most surprising thing was the emphasis on collaboration, realizing that the success of this whole massive shift, it doesn't hinge on one single engineering miracle. It fundamentally requires deep collaboration across totally different fields: computer science, cognitive psychology, industrial design, ethics. They all have to work together seamlessly. That interdisciplinary expertise isn't just nice to have anymore. It's absolutely essential.
Yeah, I agree. And maybe for you, the listener, the key takeaway is that this book provides the essential spatial literacy you need to be an informed citizen in this emerging era. Just being aware of how these systems work, how uniquely sensitive your location data is, that awareness is the vital first step. It allows you to start demanding ethical design and responsible governance for these incredibly powerful technologies that are already influencing your daily routes, your shopping habits, maybe even your opportunities.
Which leaves us with a final provocative thought for you to consider. Given that these location trails can reveal so much about a person's private life, their health, their religion, their associations, their habits, what unique legal or policy safeguards do you think should exist specifically for location data? Safeguards that might not apply to other kinds of digital information.
Something to think about as you move through your world today. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.